Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
Hello, world. Welcome back to Thanks for Coming In. I'm your host, Jillian Clare. Here we are. We're doing another episode. How are you doing today? I am doing good. Thank you for asking. I want to connect with you guys more. So if you're listening to this now, you can go to the show notes and you'll see all of the social media links for the show. And let's talk, because I'm really grateful y'all are listening every week. It's been really fun for me. It's kept me busy, which is nice because I'm a workaholic and staying home all the time has just about killed me. I'm just driving in my car a lot, which is interesting. I got a new car though, so that's exciting. I haven't had a new car in like 10 years. I got my first baby that I bought when I was like 18. And I haven't had a new one since then. So I got a new one because she's she needs to be retired, that car. I love that car. And I'm not going to get rid of her. I refuse. But I got a new Nissan and I love it. It's very exciting. I feel like an adult because I have a new car and I haven't had one in so long. And it's the first car that I've actually got that is like brand new. Like I've never had like a brand new anything before. So that's cool. I don't know why I'm saying that, but it was an exciting moment in my life. And I think it's probably the best thing that's happened during quarantine. So that's my car story. I hope you enjoyed it. Today on the show, I have Stephen Kramer Glickman. You know him as Gustavo from Big Time Rush, but he has a crazy story in store for you. And I'm really excited for you to hear it. He's also in Netflix's White Fang. He was in the movie Storks. He does a bunch of improv. He also has a line with Hot Topic. He is just out there killing it. He's hella funny. I just said hella like I'm a surfer dude. I don't know. Is that a thing anymore? Do people say that? Anyway, here's my conversation with Stephen Kramer Glickman. Everybody, welcome Stephen.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
How you doing today?
I'm good. This is a nice day. I just finished watching a show on Netflix, Never Have I Ever. And
I just watched that too. It's so good.
So good. The writing and the cast, everything about that was just so lovely. They did a great job.
Yeah, I really loved that show. I binged it all in like one day. I thought it was just really cute.
Yeah, it's funny how like certain shows you can binge, just, you know, you can watch everything. Like Upload on Amazon Prime, I started on Saturday. I finished Sunday morning. Like I just watched the whole thing. And same thing with this. I started watching it yesterday at around maybe 10 o'clock and I finished it just about an hour ago.
Yeah. Isn't it crazy now that we just like binge entire series? Like we're in a couple days. We're just like, yeah, I'm just going to watch this whole show.
Yeah. It's insane. It's amazing.
Yeah. I never thought that I'd be able to do that back in the days when you'd have to wait an entire week to see another episode of something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's how I am with 90 Day Fiancé. It's like it comes Sunday.
I'm 90 like, Day right, Fiancé.
Let's light it up. Let's light it up.
Oh no, I don't think I've ever seen an episode of that show in my entire life.
Oh, you are missing out. It is it is the Fast and Furious of television reality network programming. It's like if crystal meth was a reality show. That's what that is. It is high octane fucked up, sorry for the language, but it is.
You're good.
High octane fucked up television to it's like oh you like Catfish, oh yeah you're about to have your world rocked by this, like,
my god,
it's extraordinarily terrifying television.
Did you watch that series that Netflix did, the Love is Blind one?
Yeah, not only did I watch it, my podcast interviewed one of the cast members, right?
Which one?
The British girl. I'm forgetting her name. She was like one of the main girls, British.
Oh man, I'm forgetting. 100% forgetting.
She was very nice. She's from England, and she's got this like really funny accent. She was kind of like playing dumb a little bit on the show.
Okay. I feel like I need to rewatch that. That and The Circle. I liked The Circle a lot.
Chloe Veitch. Chloe is who we had on the show. And we asked her, this is 100% true. We said, Chloe, on the TV show, you learned the word animosity. And you made kind of a big deal about learning that word. Have you learned any new words? And she said, oh, it's funny you ace that. I actually do have a new word I learned. And it's like the word or whatever for like when how like the world right now is like in this terrible place. It's never happened before. It's like the word for that. And we're like unprecedented. And she goes, oh yeah, that's God. The one I learned. And we're like, well, you didn't because you didn't know it.
You didn't use it. You read it once and that was it.
Like, holy shit. So yeah, that was great. I loved that. I really enjoyed Love is Blind. I thought that, I'm talking about Too Hot to Handle. I did watch.
Oh.
Yeah, I did watch Love is Blind as well, which is ridiculous.
I need to watch Too Hot to Handle now. I'm going to write that down.
Yeah, Too Hot to Handle. That's the show, the reality show. Sorry. I have a bell on my desk. I don't know why. The Too Hot to Handle is the show where you can't touch any. It's all a bunch of hot people, and they can't touch each other.
Oh, poor hot people.
I know. It's like, come on, hot people. Don't you want to touch each other? But they can't because they lose money every time they touch each other.
Oh, my God.
It's terrible.
It's like the game that you used to play when you were a kid. The floor is lava, except other people are lava.
Exactly. You get it, Jillian. You get it.
I get it. Oh, man. Good times. All right. So take me back. What got you? Because you've done so much. I was looking you up. I'm like, oh, my God, this guy is like unstoppable. He's doing everything.
Aww.
What got you into entertainment in the first place? Was it improv, comedy, or was it the need to act? What brought you here?
I mean, as a kid, I was, you know how they do like show and tell in class when you're a kid? So like when I was a kid and I'd be in like second, third grade and that, and like those grades, it was like, I wanted to do show and tell every day. And every day I had like some sort of thing I wanted to show everybody. Like, and they were like, that's not how this works. Like, are you okay?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay. I wasn't sure if it sounded like a microphone fell, but
it did. Did a microphone fall?
Okay. You're like, I'm in.
I'm like, what's happening? Is the world ending?
It's like, oh, not yet. I haven't finished 90 Day Fiancé yet.
Yeah, I need to watch a show.
Come on. No, so I mean, from a very young age, I really enjoyed performing. Like, I was a little magician when I was like 6, 7 years old, because like,
amazing.
That is really a sign that, like, if your kid wants to do magic, that's a sign, dude. Like, you got to put your kid in some theater, you know, get them some acting lessons, because they're just trying to perform, and that's one of the only ways to do it when you're a kid. So. That's, you know, from a young age, I always wanted to like entertain. I don't know if like acting was always like, especially acting in theater was like, it was like the only way of doing it, really.
Right. It's the only way to get the performance out of you and the attention that we all seek as performers.
Yeah. And you know, I was, you know, as a little kid, you know, growing, I grew up in San Diego. There wasn't, you know, there was a lot of community theater, but there wasn't a lot of film and television, and we didn't really know how to get into that. So it wasn't something, wasn't really an option. And so, doing theater was kind of like the way to break in and learn the craft. And so I mean, I did community theater my entire childhood, and then
that's amazing
all the way through high school. I mean, I did like four musicals a year throughout high school.
That's awesome. I loved doing theater when I was a kid. I thought it was the most fun thing in the world.
Oh, so much fun. And like, you know, just such an incredibly good time. Like, I miss doing live theater so much. But,
yeah, because you create this like family of people, and it's so warm and welcoming, and having that applause at the end of the night is always just so nice.
Oh yeah. That's why I started doing stand up was because I was on tour doing a musical that I hated doing. I hated this particular show.
Oh no.
It was a terrible musical. And we got to this place where it was like we got to Canoga Park in the Valley in Los Angeles, and the tour had to stop for a month, and we just had to wait out like some problems that had happened to the theater that we were going to be performing in.
Oh my gosh.
And there was a stand-up comedy show in the, like, basically next to the hotel where we were staying at. And I ended up trying it there and then leaving the tour to just do stand up and live on another comedian's couch. And that's kind of how it happened for me. It was like,
I love that. I love that you found something else and you're just like, okay, I'm done with you. Bye. I'm over here now.
Yeah. And it really was like, you know, the idea of writing jokes and then getting up on stage and telling jokes and telling stories and finding your voice. And, I'd always been such a huge fan of stand-up and had been listening to, you know, comedians my entire life. So I was like, I badly wanted to be a part of it. I just didn't really know how. And then then I got the opportunity and it was like, oh, okay.
And you're still doing stand-up.
Yeah.
You're still doing that because you just had that album come out.
Yeah, my album came out in March, and it's done well.
So cool.
And it's it was you know, it's something that I still do. I'm doing it in 10-11 days from now. Me and Tom Green are doing and a couple other very talented people, Ian Edwards and Ben Glebe. Four or five of us are doing a big show that's online, but it's for Chicago, for the city of Chicago. And it's going to be a whole big, gigantic, you know, like it's a Zoom show, but where there's hundreds of people on the Zoom watching you perform.
Wow. So, that's so cool.
It'll be neat. It'll be a neat situation for sure. For sure.
I love that. I love that it was like you found this thing and then you're still doing it all these years later and it's something that's huge now for you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And like, you know, the comedy community kind of like knows, like they know that like I came up in musical theater. They know that I'm like, I tried to hide it as long as I possibly could. But
you can't hide things. Google exists.
Yeah, seriously. Once I got onto Nickelodeon too, it was like, This is really weird to say this, but like most of the comedians at the Comedy Store and you know, the improv and stuff.
Yeah.
When I got Big Time Rush, it was not like, it was basically like, if you're a comedian, you're a comedian and that's it. Like, you just are right. a stand-up comedian and you don't also take acting classes and stuff. And then slowly, right around the time I got the Nickelodeon show, I remember hearing that a couple people were taking acting classes and that it wasn't like embarrassing anymore to talk about trying to do other stuff, because people kind of, you know, comedians at the time were kind of like in a weird place. And this is 10 years ago. So the vibe, the energy around stand-ups was like, it was just a weird place, man. It was like Carlos Mencia and Larry the Cable Guy. You know? And it's changed so much now with people like Joe Rogan and Bill Burr.
Yeah.
You know, all these super, super talented, you know, Maria Bamford and Sarah Silverman, all these like insane.
People. I feel like people are more interested in stand-up comedy now as well. I think than ever.
Huge boom right now. I mean, my God, the amount of money that Netflix has spent on stand-up comedy specials.
So much money.
God, it's outrageous.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Tell me about, because you have a podcast too, right? You have the Nighttime Show?
Yeah. We've been doing Nighttime Show for 4 years now. Basically came out of like having... You know how this business is? We were talking about this, you know, pre-show, that like you have from, you know, being on Victorious and then from, you know, from doing the Victorious movie and then mm-hmm. your history in Hollywood, like, you know, a lot of famous people and people that are hard to get to for most of America. And
right.
it's the same kind of situation that I'm in where like I go to a movie premiere and Joey Fatone from NSYNC is there and then we hang out and then that would be the end of it. And maybe we go get lunch, but that's the end of the thing. And it's like, well, wouldn't it be cool to have something that I could go, hey, would you want to spend an hour with me sitting, you know, in person and talking about, you know, your life history. And by the time that hour is over, you and that person are bonded forever for knowing more about each other and growing this you know, connection.
It's so true. I've even had friends on here that there's just things that I didn't even know about them that I felt like I should, because I've known them for so long, and you still learn so much just over a podcast.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. I love that about podcasting is like, you know, I mean, I do the show with three of my best friends and
how fun.
Yeah. Which is really, really fun. And it's also been a fun opportunity to kind of like do stuff like, you know, I mean, sometimes we drive each other crazy, but
as you do.
Yeah. But we've also gotten to do things where like one of them says like, oh, you know who I've always wanted to meet is this guy. And then I go, okay. All right. And then I go make some calls and then I'm like, guess who's on the show? And they're like, no way. And you get the person that they've always wanted to meet and they get to ask all the questions they've always wanted to ask. Like, we just did that with Lance Henriksen from Aliens. Terminator and all sorts of cool stuff. I know Lance a little bit, but my friend Mike Black, who's on the show with me, he is a massive like fan of Predator and Alien and all this stuff and knows all this guy's work. So letting him loose on Lance Henriksen was like really fun. Like, that was a great.
Did he just die over it? Was he just like over the moon?
Oh yeah. Oh, he was so happy. And it was like, it was a great interview because it was really deep. Like, they got into really deep stuff. Same thing with, we had Michael Dorn from Star Trek: The Next Generation. He played Worf, and my producer Matt, who's a co-host on the show, he's obsessed with Star Trek. So for him, it was like really fun, and they had a great time together. And you know, it's that's fun. It's fun kind of getting to do stuff like that. And then, you know, I have my nerd out moments where I'm stuttering over myself and I can't deal with who I'm talking to. And I love it. I love podcasting. It's so much fun.
I'm having a lot of fun. I didn't think that I was going to like it as much as I did. Like, I thought maybe because I don't know. I'm a talker. I'm an entertainer. So I thought that I'd probably be good at it. But I was like, oh, wait, this is really fun.
Who's your favorite person that you've had on and in the last, you know, or throughout the whole run of it? Do you have any big favorites?
Goodness. You know, my really good friend, Eric Martsoff, he was our premiere episode. And I've known him since I was literally 12 years old. I used to babysit his twins. And I thought I knew everything that there was to know, like, about his career, because we've talked so much and he's kind of been like a big brother for me.
Sure.
But I heard this story from him about him being almost being Cyclops and X-Men.
Whoa.
Before they got Hugh Jackman to be Wolverine, he was up for Cyclops. And then once they found Hugh Jackman, they recentered the story around Wolverine, hired Hugh, and then told Eric he looked too much like Hugh Jackman.
Whoa.
And I was like, holy shit, how did I not know this? So that's kind of the best part about this show, is that, like, I have these people that everybody knows from something, but they could have known them from something else. And I find that, like, super exciting and interesting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, my God, totally.
Do you have any stories that are like that?
Well, I've got a movie story and I have a stage story. They're both pretty, one's a little more impactful than the other, but they're both interesting, I guess. There was a movie called Ride Along that was Kevin Hart and Ice
Cube. Yeah.
And there was a character in Ride Along where they get called to the scene of a crime, and when they get there, mm-hmm. it's this guy and he's running naked, completely naked, through a grocery store, and he's like knocking over all sorts of stuff and just acting real crazy, and then he tackles Kevin Hart.
Oh my God.
And I went in for it and it did well. And then at the callback, I got a callback and went to the callback, and they said, I said, do you want me to take my clothes off for this? And they were like, well, I mean, whatever you're comfortable with. And I was like, okay. And I took all my clothes off except for my underwear and kept my underwear
on. Oh my
God. And they were like dying. And, I like ran around the room in nothing but my underwear and I just crushed. And I left.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I think I may have this. And then they called and said, okay. The studio, the movie studio wants you, but Ice Cube wants this actor named Gary Owen, who's a very famous comedian, but he's also very, very well loved in the African American community. Like, he is he's a white guy,
gotcha.
Red hair, but he was the first white guy to ever have a comedy special on BET. So he's a very funny guy, but he's also has like a huge following that I did not have. Like, you know, like my following is all like Nickelodeon. And
you have like 14 year olds still following you.
Yeah. So it was like, oh, this is a tricky call to make of who's going to get it. And then they said, okay, be ready to fly on Friday. We'll let you know Friday morning if you have the job or not.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
And I said, okay, and so I packed my bag.
Oh my God. They literally were just like, be ready.
Yeah, they said, be ready to fly out Friday afternoon, and we'll let you know Friday morning. And I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And then they called Friday morning and said, I'm so sorry, it's going to Gary. But then the director, who's amazing, wrote me on Twitter, like sent me a direct message and was like, you know, you were so funny and we'll find something for you down the road and we'll get to work together someday and all this kind of stuff. And so it's like, all right, that's fine.
I mean, you know, yeah, that's huge. That never happens.
No, that was a pretty crazy one where it just got so close.
Yeah.
And then the other one, I mean, the other one is insane. It's the reason I have a career in the first place is, I was working at the Comedy Store and a comedian came in that I'm friends with named Eric Marino. And he said, hey, have you heard they're having auditions for the Broadway musical Shrek? And they're looking for Shrek for the Shrek musical. And he said, you should go in for that. And I said, my exact words were, and you should go fuck yourself, because that's so rude to say that, like, I would be Shrek. Like, give me a-
You're like, screw you, man.
Oh, the worst. So rude and such a shitty thing to say. And he was like, no, dude, like, I know you have a singing voice. I know that you would crush it. Like, you should go in and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh my God, no, I'm never doing anything like that. Not interested.
It's just such a backhanded compliment.
Oh, yeah, so rude. So, like, about a month or two later, he comes in again and he's like, dude, it's happening again. They haven't found Shrek. You need to go in. You're perfect.
Oh my God.
And I was like, oh my God, come on. And I told my family, and my family was like, oh my God, of course you need to go in for that. You're like, thanks, everyone.
Thanks so much, guys.
So I go to this open call in Burbank. And if you've ever been to an open call, you know it's like hundreds of people there.
Oh, it's the worst because you're just sitting there watching all the other people go in. And usually it's like, can you do a 30-second dance and then 30 seconds or this many bars of a song? And then we'll see you act if we like your singing and dancing.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly how it was. And it was 100 fat guys in the room. And me, and I was like, what is the point of all of this? And then the guy sitting next to me said, I looked at his, what he was holding, a Meatloaf songbook.
No.
And I said, why do you have a Meatloaf songbook? I didn't even know they made Meatloaf songbook.
No.
And he goes, well, because Shrek is a rock musical. And I was like, what?
What?
It's like, yeah, the character has to sing like a rock tenor. And I was like,
oh my God.
Oh. And he goes, why? What did you bring? And I was like, the bare necessities. I just figured, you know, big, that's, you know, the bear in Jungle Book is a big guy. Like, you know, they're looking for a big character that's a big voice. You know?
I'm dying.
I don't know. And the guy said, well, yeah, don't do that. And I was like, well, what else do I have? So I went out to my car and I popped my trunk and I looked in my trunk and I had a Ray Charles songbook. And okay. I was like, okay, I guess I'll just do a Ray Charles song and that'll be what I do. And I went back, I went back in and I sat there with all the other guys and waited until all the equity people auditioned.
Yeah.
And then it was finally my turn to go in. And I walked in and it was Tara Rubin, the casting director, and mm-hmm. Jason Moore, who would go on to direct Pitch Perfect, the movie.
Oh, wow.
And so it's just the two of them and me and the piano player. And I was like, all right, I'm going to do What I Say by Ray Charles. Hmm. And I handed the guy the sheet music and I sang and I finished. And the director looked at the casting director, looked back at me and said, we've been looking for you for 3 years.
What?
That is 100% true.
Holy crap. And what a thing to hear.
I went, what are you talking about? Can you read for this now? Can we give you sides and would you read? And I said, yeah, for what character? And they were like, for Shrek. And I was like, why would you have me read for Shrek? There's no way you're going to cast an unknown for the role of Shrek. And
right.
And they said, well, we're thinking about casting an unknown. That's why we're doing this. And I was like,
wow.
Okay. And so I took the sides. I went outside. I didn't have a Scottish accent. I hadn't seen Shrek in maybe since it had been in the theater.
Yeah.
So, it had been a few years. So, I mean, I did like a British accent. I came back in. I did the scene and they were like, can you come back tomorrow and have like go watch the movie tonight and like work on the accent and come back tomorrow? And I said, yeah, okay. And so
Oh my god, this is crazy.
On the way home, I stopped by a video store.
Oh, I'm sorry. What can you say? A video store? What is that?
A video store. A store where they sell videotapes. And
for all of the teenagers listening, that's an actual store with videos in them.
Yeah. And I went in and I got, I picked up a copy of Shrek. I bought it. And I remember it was like $14. And I remember that being a big deal. Like an investment.
Yeah.
Like I was like not used to spending money on or doing anything. I was like, $14. How the fuck am I going to pay?
You're like, son of a bitch. Like, there's my dinner tomorrow.
Yeah. I was like, I'm missing dinner for tomorrow night. That's how this is going to go. So I watched it and I sat there and I listened to his voice all night. I think I watched the movie probably 6 or 7 times that
oh my like, God.
Over the next, 24 hours waiting to go back to the audition and, yeah. And felt like I had a pretty good, version of the voice. And I went back in the next day and just crushed it and got lots of laughs. They asked me to do another scene and I did another scene and, same thing, like where it was pretty solid.
Just vibing.
Yeah. And then they were like, can you come back again? And I said, sure. And then I kept going to callbacks. And it was about 7 callbacks in.
Holy crap.
Oh,
seven
yeah.
callbacks?
We're not even close. So
what?
Seven callbacks in, I am they brought in Janine Tesori, who wrote Thoroughly Modern Millie, and she mm-hmm. wrote Caroline or Change, and then she had written this Shrek. And so she was like, hey, I want you to hear the opening song. No one else has heard it yet, but I want you to hear what it would sound like. And when I tell you, Jillian, like up to this point, I was taking these callbacks, but in my mind, I was like, there is no chance I am getting this role. There's no way.
Right.
And
well, because Broadway is like such a huge thing and a huge role like that, you normally don't even get to audition for anything like that until it's already been on and they're replacing it.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, I know enough about the history of Broadway to know that this is not a really, this is really not actually happening. Like, I was like, I'm enjoying right. every time I go in, but like, I don't really give a shit at this point.
And then, you're like, I'm not going to get it. It's fine.
Yeah. Like, I just didn't want to get my hopes up. I didn't have an agent or a manager or anything. So I was like,
oh my God.
I was like, this is just, you know, for funsies, basically. And I get to brag to my friends back at the comedy club that, like, I've been auditioning. Maybe I'll get some jokes out of it. Like, who knows? And, yeah. And then they played me the opening song. And by the time the opening song was over, I was like, oh, it's war. Like, I will fight to the death to play this role. Like, I no longer...
Oh, wow.
The part of me that was a part of me that is only kicked in a few times in my life where I was like, this is war. I'm going to fight with everything I have to do this. And I'm going to use all the little things that I have in my life to make it work. One of those things was Bobby Lee from Mad TV over at the Comedy Store. I went to him and was like, will you run lines with me? And
wow.
And he was like, yeah, sure. And so I got comedy notes from Bobby Lee. And then I got comedy notes from like all of the best comedians at the club. And we would do stuff like one of the comics.
You were like super committed at this point. You were like, this is it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I started seeing that it was a possible, there was an ending to this that could have been good. So I fought really, really hard. And I did a total of 32 callbacks.
Stop it.
32. For the role of Shrek. And at the final callback, it was in the room. It was Jeffrey Katzenberg, David Geffen, Sam Mendes.
Jesus.
Yeah. David Lindsay Abaire, who wrote the movie Lincoln for Steven Spielberg. He wrote the script. And Tim Weil, the musical director for Rent. And Janine and Jason and the casting director and a bunch of other people. And I went in.
That's a room full of people that I'm pretty sure if I had gone in to see that amount of amazing people, I'd just pass out.
Yeah, very, very intense. Like, and you know, I don't do drugs or I wasn't doing any sort of thing to, I wasn't taking Xanax or anything. Like, I just dealt with it. And I went in and I sang the part and I did the thing and I left and, about a week later, I was in the car, driving in the car, and I got a call from DreamWorks saying that they were casting me as Shrek in Shrek the Musical on the Broadway.
And, what?
Yep. And they picked me up from my shitty, crappy apartment in Encino, where I lived with a born-again Christian who hated that he was living with a Jewish guy. And a drug addict, by the way. They moved out of the apartment and they put me on a plane, first class, and moved me to 58th and Fifth Avenue in New York City. Oh, to the most gorgeous, giant place.
I mean, that's got to be beautiful.
Oh, yeah. And I signed with the biggest comedy management company in LA. And it was like this huge thing. I got out there. I got to work with Sutton Foster and all these huge Broadway stars, and it was great, but right before it opened on Broadway, they made the decision that they were going to replace me and replace the guy playing the donkey with a Tony winning, like Tony nominated, Tony winning actors. And like basically buy us out of our contracts. And it was heartbreaking, to say the least, but we both got royalties on the show for 20 years. So
holy crap.
Yeah. So anytime the show plays anywhere in the world, we get sent a check in the mail, which is pretty cool.
That's pretty dope.
Yeah. And I was super lucky that, like, even though it was a really hard thing to lose and to get so close, a couple of things happened, that, you know, not to drag this story out forever, but a couple of things happened that made this a little more interesting. This happened in 2008 at the height of the crash in New York City.
Yeah.
A ticket to see Shrek on Broadway was hundreds of dollars, and the budget on Shrek was, I'm pretty sure, let's see, budget on Shrek the musical.
Googling.
The budget was somewhere between $25 million and $55 million, in that range. The problem, so the tickets were high. The show flopped really hard in New York City.
Mm.
It did not do well. They cut a lot of the music that was incredibly beautiful, right before it opened.
Oh my God.
It got nominated for Tonys and Drama Desk Awards, but it didn't really win very much, or I don't think it won anything. And at the same time as it opened on Broadway, I was cast on Big Time Rush on Nickelodeon.
Oh, wow.
So it was sad, because I was out of this thing, but it was like, you know, not to be like God has a plan, but it's like, you know, the world works in mysterious and magical ways. And
yeah,
if I would have been cast in Shrek, if I would have played Shrek on Broadway in the Broadway musical, the rest of my career
it would be so different.
Yeah,
don't even know what it would be.
I wouldn't have the life that I have now, which I am incredibly lucky that I have. So, you know, that's just
wow.
That's how that goes. That's how that goes sometimes.
Yeah, you know? It's how it goes. But it's true. I do think that there's some sort of obviously like higher power, something happening that gets us to where we need to be. And it's crazy that Big Time Rush literally came right after Shrek. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah, like I shot the pilot for Big Time Rush literally a few months after I landed back from New York City.
Wow. And
what was crazy was I met with the president of Universal, and the president of Universal was like, oh, congrats on starring in Shrek on Broadway. That's so great. I heard you did a great job. So, you know, let's talk about what's next for you. And I said, oh, I only actually starred in the Broadway workshop of Shrek, not the actual Broadway run. And, and she said, don't ever tell anyone that ever again.
Shut your mouth. Don't say that.
Yeah. And I said, well, I don't want to be dishonest. And she was like, if someone that is the head of a studio or network says congratulations on something, just say,
take it.
I don't know what a Broadway workshop is. I don't care about Shrek the musical or whatever the hell it was. Like, I don't know any of the songs from it. It doesn't make any difference. All I heard is, you are good. You are now in my office. And that's how that's the end of the story. And I was like, okay, all right. Like, I can tell.
Got it.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Yeah, seriously. So it was,
wow.
it was an interesting lesson to learn that, like, you know, what matters to you doesn't always matter to everybody else, of course. Right. But also, like, you know, accomplishments are accomplishments. Like, doing the job that I did out there was a big enough thing. It doesn't need to be more than what it was. Like, I don't have anything that I really regret or wish that I would have done differently in the
right.
You know, in doing it. Like, I did the best I could possibly do, and I've stayed close in touch with everybody I worked with, and I've seen,
that's so cool.
Yeah, like, and being able to, like, you know, have any sort of connection, you know, like with, you know, Jeffrey Katzenberger, David Geffen, yeah. Sam, or any of these people.
Those are huge people. Like, those names are just massive to me. Like, yeah. I see those names, I'm like, oh wow, hi.
Yeah, it was a really, it definitely made a big impact on my life. So lucky.
Wow.
Lucky
that what a story. I can't get past the whole 32 auditions thing. Like, that just is woof, duh.
Yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot.
That's so much. It's just
It was literally how I was spending my days. And they would, you know, the callbacks were not all like, okay, you come in and you go up against a bunch of other people. The callbacks were sometimes like, come in, spend some time with the musical director, work on a song, you know, hear.
Wow.
You know, like, or like work on something else, work on the accent. Some of the callbacks were performing with other actors that they were considering, mm-hmm. where they were just testing chemistry out between different
people.
But it was a lot. It was a lot.
It's almost like they were like grooming you for the role.
Yeah. I think they were trying to figure out if having an unknown person was going to work for them, or if they, because a lot of times with Broadway workshops, that's really how that works. The woman who played Elphaba in Wicked on Broadway, Stephanie Block, she played Elphaba for years in Broadway workshops and readings of Wicked until right before it opened, and was replaced with Idina Menzel. And that's the sad truth. I mean, Stephanie Block's voice, you ever get a chance to check out her performance as Elphaba on YouTube, and you'll be like, oh my God, that's
who I'm going to do this.
It was written
for
her.
Right after.
Like,
wow.
She's a coat of paint on that sheet music, you know, for Elphaba. It's pretty cool.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing both of your stories. I mean, what a crazy ride. I mean, so cool.
Yeah. Oh, it is a such a crazy and fun business, and has, you know, learning how to trust the people that are on your team,
mm-hmm.
and you know, making leaps and jumps with the people that you care about is like, oh my God, it can be so much fun.
Yeah, it is fun. I love it. Well, thank you again. How can people find you on social media?
Of course, people can get me at Stephen Glickman, Stephen Glickman, on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. Oh, TikTok.
Oh, God. No.
And you can listen to the Nighttime Show podcast, which airs every week, Friday, a new episode comes out, and they're always fun and weird chats with all sorts of different folks.
We love it. Thanks so much, Stephen.
You bet. Thanks again. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you again to Stephen for coming on the show and sharing that ogre of a story. I don't know. I was trying to be funny. It wasn't working. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Make sure to subscribe wherever you're listening to it right now. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your dog, and connect with me on social media. All of the links to the show are in the show notes. I'd love to say hello to you and talk to y'all and see who you are. So, you know, follow me. Follow the show. And I'll say hello. Tune in next week to hear my conversation with Cynthia Carmona. You know her from Greenhouse Academy and East Los High. She has a new movie called The Tax Collector coming out soon, August 7th. And we have a great time. And until then, thanks for coming in.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.